everybody, this is Aaron and Jim back with another Commission Podcast. This one, it's a solo joint by Tyler Shumway.
That's right.
I guess there was talk about doing a Buffy Commission Podcast, like as a joint project, and he's like, I'm going to take the reins, and he went ahead and commissioned it all.
I think he wanted the choice of episodes.
He did, and I think he did a hell of a job, Tyler, because two to three episodes I really enjoyed, and the one that I didn't, I suspect it's not the episode's fault. Okay. And I got some stuff to say about all of them. So he commissioned Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the television show, one of Josh Whedon's first, or maybe it is his first. It's the first one
for
I remember
show?
Him for being kind of.
When was Alias? Wait, no, that was
J.J. Abrams.
That's the other guy, yeah.
So, I mean, he could have had
Whedon.
Like a dollhouse or something with some hot girl in it that's like every one of his projects. It's one of his earliest works.
Sure.
And he commissioned three episodes in particular, season 4, episode 10, Hush, season 5, episode 16, The Body, and episode 6. Or season 6, episode 7, Once More with a Feeling.
Oh, come on. Well, he wrote 4 episodes of Roseanne before Buffy, so come on.
That's a real horror show. And I think he did well to kind of run the gamut of Buffy emotions. You had a solid attempt at creepy horror kind of X-Files standalone monster of the week. You had, like somebody swinging for the Emmys kind of like heavy emotion and character moments in The Body. And then I think you had, like, just off-the-wall Joss Whedon meta-referential humor-type episode, Once More with Feeling.
Yeah.
Like I said, I didn't have a bad time for any. I just, out of the three, The Body is the one that I just couldn't connect with.
Huh. Okay. I like The Body more than I liked Once More with Feeling. Is that what it's called?
You didn't like the musical one?
I don't like musicals. Yeah.
Oh my god.
I'm not a fan.
Oh god, I'm so heartbroken because it was my clear it's hard to say. I mean, my predilections are such that I enjoyed Once More with Feeling with Hush, but honestly, I had a giant smile over my face for both of those episodes.
So
and
it's weird.
I was hoping you were going to dig it because I was actually going to self-commission fucking Singing in the Rain finally. It's something I've been kicking. I was going to pay you $150.
Well, let me throw $50 confusion into the mix.
Okay.
I actually really like Dr. Horrible.
Huh.
And I think it's because the acting and singing and songwriting are so much better in that. Like, this feels like a musical made in a week. This is like, you know, if it's like a Charlie Day sort of thing. Where Charlie's like, oh, I came in. Joss comes in with all these scraps of paper and he's
right.
like, I did this over the past week. It was just a brain dump. Let's get it down. I really thought it was just slapdash put together, whereas Dr. Horrible felt like everybody in there can sing, and like it felt like a more cohesive story.
Right.
It also probably hurts it that I'm picking up in a season 6 episode with no context whatsoever.
Right.
So like these people are talking about all their motivations and like revealing their darkest secrets and worries,
which
and shit,
I have a
and I'm
lot
like,
of questions
okay,
about that,
bro,
and how it fits in with the overall season.
Right.
Huh.
So, yeah, that was my least favorite.
Well, he's got some interesting notes about that that kind of maybe fulfill out our background. I thought what we should do is go over Tyler's introductory notes, and we can talk about our own relationship with Buffy, and then get into an episode-by-episode discussion guided by Tyler.
Okay.
So, Tyler's preamble. I didn't really get into television until my early 20s. I watched it growing up, of course, but I never realized how deep and profound it could be until I started watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer. The first season was pretty terrible, but my friends promised me it got better, and by the end of the second season, I was hooked. At the time, I didn't really analyze the show enough to grasp all the nuance and metaphor Joss was going for, but I knew that the show spoke to me in ways no other had. It opened my mind and forced me to ask uncomfortable questions about gender roles and sexualities I'd never really thought about before. The show originally had its rough moments, but they were more than made up for by the show's many moments of brilliance. I recently went back and rewatched most of the series to see if it was really as good as I remembered. Not only did it hold up like a champ, but I found myself identifying with completely different parts of the series. The high school as hell metaphors from earlier seasons still worked, but it was the struggles of becoming an adult and dealing with your inner demons in the later seasons that really resonated with me this time through. I can see myself liking the series for completely different reasons in 10 years, or maybe preferring a spinoff series, Angel, which deals with continuing to be the person you want to be, fighting through life with hope and courage, even though it's probably a losing battle. I really believe the show has something for everyone, and should you guys choose to revisit, I think it could be a rewarding experience. Now, how much of Buffy had you seen prior to this commission, Jim?
I've seen some of season one, I think.
Okay.
Definitely not none of season one, and I don't think all of season one.
Okay. I've seen all of season one in its entirety. Why did you start watching Buffy?
Just because people said it was good. And it was Joss Whedon. Like,
yeah.
You know, by the time I had seen did so much more that he did.
I was going to say, did you watch it before or after Firefly?
Way after.
Way after, okay. Yeah. I had a girlfriend that, you know, made, I say in quotation marks made, because if I have affection for someone and they tell me I should watch something, mm-hmm. I give it a try. I thought season one was really a bad joke, and like we broke up like a couple episodes
over it.
Yeah. No, that we broke up for other unrelated reasons, or maybe they were related. Maybe, I can't say that about Tyler. Tyler's a really nice guy. But yeah, we broke up and I had like three episodes to go and I'm like, fuck it, I'll finish it. And I remember just being completely underwhelmed by even the follow through that season. Hmm. So kind of the special effects, especially in that first season, I guess were really goofy. So I just gave it a pass. But I did know like the basics of who they were in the storyline. And I'd seen the classic Christy Swanson, or is this? Yeah, Christy Swanson.
Oh, the movie?
The one that spawned it all, that had Pee Wee Herman in it, hilariously.
Right.
And Luke Perry was her boyfriend, I think. They actually had a lot of big names you would have thought would have been big and kind of went jack shit nowhere.
Hey, Pee Wee's got another movie. What are you talking about?
Well, that was kind of his comeback. Like, that was his first role after, you know, he got caught masturbating in a porn theater.
And then it took another
20 years.
That's a crime?
Yeah, he finally...
25 years later, he got another one.
Yeah.
Another shot.
Another. Did he go to prison again?
No.
Over masturbation?
Didn't Netflix do a...
Well, if he gets caught a third time, he's a lifer, man. Right. Three strikes, you're out. What was I saying? The original is my experience with Buffy.
About, yeah.
So yeah. Having said that, what did you? Let's talk about Hush first.
This is my favorite.
Okay.
I really like this episode.
All right.
I do think. So there's a lot of obvious metaphor going on here. I mean, mm-hmm. if you take what they're talking about in the very beginning, when she has this little daydream sort of thing, or I guess just a dream because she falls asleep in class. Yeah. And then you extend that to this whole idea.
That's literally a daydream, yeah. Is it during the daytime?
I guess, yeah. But if you extend that, you know, to these monsters, these demons, whatever, that come in and take people's voices, and now you have to actually communicate without talking so much.
Right.
The metaphor is maybe a little heavy-handed. And that's the biggest complaint I have about this show, for the most part, is, A, it's 90s as fuck.
Yeah.
Like, even though a lot of the stuff we saw in 2000s, mm-hmm. A lot of the episodes we saw take place in the 2000s,
right?
It's 90s as fuck.
Right.
Like, this show.
Sure.
Man. But my other complaint is it's a little heavy-handed with the metaphor. And I do like the ideas there, but I think it maybe goes a little too on the nose with it.
Well, see, that's why I think it's great and why it speaks, because Tyler, if I'm not mistaken, is from Utah.
Okay.
Which is a fairly, you know, socially conservative state. And I think that shows like Buffy and like Star Trek Next Generation was mine. Like, you could go your whole life without thinking about what it's like to be a minority or a gay person, let alone transsexual or anything like that, until Star Trek crams it down your throat. And honestly, we say it's too on the nose, but I'm thinking, like, if my 15-year-old self had seen the episode with Riker and the androgynous woman who might have been a man, or a place where... I forget where, like that planet heterosexuality was a crime, I think it was.
Okay.
And, like, if it hadn't been so in your face...
You wouldn't have understood
it. I don't even think I would have gotten what they were trying to say.
Right.
So...
This is a show for younger people, right?
So, yeah, like this might be the first time, you know, if you're in your teens or 20s, it might be the first time you ever have to think about something like this.
Absolutely, and so I do forgive it a little bit, and I did really enjoy this episode.
I was going to say, is it more heavy-handed than your average Star Trek episode?
No, God no.
So I thought, like, every time I felt a little bit of my, like, what the fuck, meter going off, I try to, like, okay, compare this to the episode where Data's daughter died.
Okay.
And think about, like, how objectively silly everything in that episode is, and yet, improbably, it's emotional because of your connection to the characters. I try to have that carry me. But anyway, yeah. So what do you think they're trying to say about with Hush? What was the metaphor?
I mean, the whole thing was, like, talking getting in the way of actual communication.
Just the words.
Saying things for the sake of saying things. I mean, that was the problem between Buffy. And can we talk about the relationship that's mm-hmm. going on here between... Okay, clarify something for me.
I'll try, man.
Is Buffy still in high school at this point?
I think this is her first year in college.
Okay, that makes it slightly less creepy, but still... utterly creepy that she is dating who she thinks is a professor or has the hots for openly.
He's a teacher's assistant, right? So that means he's essentially
he's a teacher's assistant. Okay,
you're talking about the action hero guy,
yeah,
right?
The military, yeah. What the faux military dude,
uh-huh, uh-huh. Yeah. Which, by the way,
who goes to basically some loft and acts like he's a military guy?
And the name of it's like the Initiative. Like, what the fuck is up with these government programs being like named after generic Wheaties boxes, like
right.
Corn cereal Initiative?
It's just cheesy.
Like, True Blood had the authority. Like, come the fuck on.
I know.
You've got a thousands-year-old vampire court, and its name is the Authority?
Authority. They didn't have as many words back then, man.
It's not even, like, some kind of cool Latin name?
We got Authority, or we got,
right.
Barnaby Jones Society.
Right.
What do you want?
They should have, like, sports teams, or they have mascots. They could be a lot more colorful that way.
They could.
But yeah, you got the
Spike
Initiative.
Is plenty colorful. I don't know that he needs a mascot. He's kind of a mascot in himself.
So here's the interesting thing. I don't know who plays Spike because I'm not that big of a fan. But
I don't either.
One thing I became aware of, and if you listen to any of the audiobooks of the Harry Dresden, the Dresden Files series by Jim Butcher, and I'm a big fan of those works, is it James Marsden? Anyway, whoever plays Spike is the narrator for all those books.
No. I think you're confusing Spike. Spike is
the
blonde-haired
yeah.
vampire.
Mm-hmm. Yes. He is the narrator for all of the Jim Butcher files, the Dresden Files.
All right. Weird. I thought you were talking about the military.
I remember
guy.
whenever I'm in like one of the fan groups on Reddit, everybody loses their shit because usually, you know, the one-to-one correspondence of being a Dresden Files and a Buffy fan is pretty. Those Venn diagrams heavily overlap, and I was the one guy like, I don't understand why everybody's losing their shit about him reading this book, you know? But now it's like, I still don't get it. But I actually thought Spike was one of my favorite characters.
Yeah, Spike's pretty good.
Which was tough because he's kind of a douche, and his head looks like a 1980s Ken doll sculpt.
All right.
Like, those are not, that's synthetic. His head is synthetic.
Yeah, no, he doesn't look human. He
speaking
looks
of
very...
Data, he's a Noonian-type android. Like, that's not real hair.
It's certainly not real hair color, I can tell you that much. The guy, you almost don't need to morph him when you turn him into the vampire version of himself, right?
Yeah, Cecily walked in, I was in the middle of finishing up my first watch of Once More with Feeling.
Uh-huh.
She came in, it was a girls' night, so she came in at like 9:30, and I was finishing up, and she walked in, and she took one look at Spike and said, his hair looks like uncooked ramen noodle.
God.
And I'm like, well, you got him. And yet,
yeah,
I kind of think...
when you push that much gel in it.
I kind of think he's one of my favorite characters in these episodes. Because he's the only one that kind of...
Yeah.
He's the Han Solo? Like, he's the one kind of like, sure. This is kind of... This kind of getting to be self-important bullshit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I like the main four characters, I guess. Buffy, mm-hmm. Willow, Xander, and
I don't like Xander.
Giles.
And
you
also,
don't like Xander?
In season one, I thought Xander was kind of a nerd, and now
he was
like a fucking ripped male model type.
But he's still a nerd. Like, he
really?
Looks different, but he's still the same. It seems to me like he's still the same character.
He seems like he's one of the recurring jokes is how much tail he pounds. Like,
But he's with that... He's with that ex-demon whatever lady.
So?
Like, he's got a girlfriend, I would assume. Yeah, he probably gets it.
I know, but I'm saying, like, they had a joke about him contracting some weird, sound like demonic sexual STD in the Once More With Feeling.
What?
No. And
see, half of Once More With Feeling is just like went right over my head because I couldn't understand what they were saying because they were singing.
You just blacked out when they started singing?
Or like half of the time they're singing over each other and you can't even tell what they're saying. And like, yeah, I did. Man, I really.
Sorry, this is going to go all over the fucking place. Sorry to tell. I thought we could keep it to one individual episode, but apparently
not. I think the like four main characters.
But he's always talking about like he's like some sex. Well, I guess that's consistent with the. So you just think he's just a nerd that happened to land up.
Sex obsessed, right? He's thinking about boobs and ass all the time. Yeah.
Okay.
But I don't know. He seems like the same character to me. Anyway, yeah, so those four are pretty good and still pretty good in seasons 4, 5, and 6. Mm-hmm. And then everybody else they've brought in around them is really not great.
You don't like Giles?
No, Giles is one of the main four.
Oh, I thought it was Buffy.
Buffy, Willow, Xander, Giles.
That's oh, him. Okay. I thought you were. I
mean, Spike's okay. Spike's fine.
Yeah, are you a Spike or an Angel Man?
Who's Angel?
He's the guy who did the
spinoff series.
He's the Bones guy.
Yeah, I don't care. I don't give a shit.
Gerard Depardieu, I think, is his name.
Yes. Boy, he's really gone to seed since
just
then.
Just really piss off the Buffy fans, including the guy who gave us $300 to commission this podcast.
Yeah, but I'm not totally sold on the on whoever Willow's girlfriend is. I don't know. She's a little too Ren Faire for me. Willow's kind of too Ren
Faire
for me.
You know what? Yeah, and the problem, I know a lot of guys think that she's like Allison Hannigan is super hot, but the problem is she looks almost exactly like my cousin Nikki, and
that's a real bummer.
It's like Drew Barrymore. It's like, no, I just, no, mm-mm. I can't even see that spectrum.
She is hotter than she has any right to be, I guess. Okay. Like, if she weren't, you know, done up and famous... I think she's just an average looking girl.
Okay. Fair.
Which, you know, I kind of think the same about Sarah Michelle Gellar.
I don't really think
any of these people are great actors. Well, yeah, of course. I'm below average looking. Whatever.
And there's a steep fall off once you get past the main.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
And that's the same thing with Star Trek. Like, you had, you know, Patrick Stewart. Mm hmm. Who was kind of on a whole other level, and then, you know, the regular cast, and then any kind of guest. Every once in a while you get an Ashley Judd.
Yeah.
But most of the time it was pretty fucking rough.
It was.
Anytime you saw a planetary governor, oh my God, this is this guy's moment to shine.
Yep. I was asking myself, where the hell is Xander, like, 10 minutes into this thing? Mm. Like, who is this shitbird military guy?
Yeah.
This inappropriately dating... teenage students guy, and I guess if he's an assistant,
he's the same age.
That's
fine. Yeah. So let's talk about what made this episode cool, which is the monster of the week. What did they actually call them? The gentlemen.
Oh yeah, the gentlemen.
I should actually let Tyler introduce this before we get too much further. He says, Buffy occasionally attempted to get into touch with his horror roots with mixed success. This episode is largely considered one of the creepiest and or nightmarish of the series, while still managing to be charming, emotional, and funny.
Had like a Silent Hill vibe with those dudes dancing around in their straight jackets.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like that.
Which I have a problem with, but we'll get to that.
Okay.
The music and acting are great, and Josh even managed to get some offensive gestures past the network censors. He's actually really successful. Like, Once More With Feeling had, like, just lesbian oral sex.
Oh, right.
Magically
enhanced
lesbian oral sex and just were you and you make
She's
me come.
Singing about it.
Yeah.
Yep. Was she talking about want you inside me? There's, like, all sorts
of
stuff.
You could decipher that shit just fine, couldn't you? Right. Your ears perked right up when you got to that scene.
Well, you know.
You have the right motivation. Anyway, the main theme of the episode, according to Josh, is when people stop talking, it's when we start communicating. Whether it's Buffy and Riley finally expressing their true feelings, or Xander finally showing Anya how much he cares about her by punching Spike, the episode does a great job exploring that. And I love that last shot where Buffy and Riley are finally able to talk again and they can't think of anything to say. That was my favorite scene in this episode, when Xander comes home and Anya's kind of like lying on the couch and Spike's picking up whatever he dropped on the floor.
Yeah. And he's got blood on his mouth because he just had a drink. Like,
and he's also all demoned out, you know, he's got his, which I always thought
he's
that was
kicking
so
back, you know, he doesn't keep up appearances when no one's around.
I always thought that was the goofiest conceit about Buffy, though. The fact that they kind of wolf out. Every time they vampire up, it's already ridiculous when they click out their fangs in True Blood, but when they get like the full on, you know, what I don't know what you call that. They go Hellboy on you.
Yeah. Yeah, their whole face changes.
Yeah. They go Guillermo del Toro on you, and then it's like, okay, I can't take it serious. But that was super funny.
That was a good scene. I think my favorite scene from this episode was the projector scene, because it's real silly.
Mm-hmm.
It has just a lot of humor, because like Giles is trying to explain what's going on here, but he can't talk.
Right.
And so people were writing, and Xander's like, what are they after? They're after boobs? No, you idiot. Hearts.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's all done through pantomime and writing it down and visual, like, pictures. And
you can tell Joss Whedon. I feel like I'm slurring Joss. Josh Whedon. Joss Whedon. God damn it. You can tell he's having a lot of fun.
Yeah.
In this and the final one as well.
Right.
And I always enjoy it. And you know what? I'm kind of bummed out that none of our favorite shows right now can do an episode like this. Like, the closest one is Mad Men, like, you know, when they had the Burt Cooper death dream.
Right.
Like, it could achieve flights of fancy like this, which I always think is like a cherry on top of a fan experience Sunday. Like, when you can believably and in-universe work in something ridiculous like this. And, like, man, wouldn't it be cool if Game of Thrones could do, like, if not a musical episode, like kind of one-off Monster of the Week thing where Arya and Jon could just be their peak cool and it didn't really matter about it. Wouldn't that be awesome?
Yeah. Like, yeah, I get what you're saying.
All the great syndicated shows could do that because, you know, they're just episodic shit. But
right.
The serialization's kind of been the death of these flights of fancy, and I miss them. The pure fan service episodes.
Yeah, it has. I also think, you know, Mad Men did a couple of these. They did the one with LSD.
Oh, yeah.
That was another real good one. Yeah, I feel like maybe Fargo might be able to get away with something like that.
Fargo probably could.
If it really just came up with a killer idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah. So, like, Giles is trying to figure all this stuff out, and he's reading his books. Of course, there are books with the crazy gentleman or, you know, the fucking singing demon in them.
Yeah.
Giles has all the books.
Yeah, he's the bookmaster.
And he's like, oh, they need to take seven, but take seven what? Souls, you fucker! It's always souls. It is always souls. They want to kill people, and they want to drink their souls.
He's kind of had a really long conversation with my son because he's playing Undertale.
Uh-huh.
And it's all about, you know, people taking human souls, empowering them. And I'm actually getting into, because if I have to listen to him drone on for this fucking game for hours on end, yeah. I like to have my fun by twisting him in knots over to metaphysics. So I'm like, well, why is it one more human soul? Well, when he burned up a million souls when he transferred to his ultimate form, but then he had one soul left when he gave. So why, when he decided to fuel his demonic form and he used a million souls, why not a million and one?
Yeah.
You're holding that one soul back. What was that? The fucking emergency reserve soul power?
It's a two-stage thing. It's like Goku doesn't go full Super Saiyan right away.
He goes 99.99999% Saiyan, but that 0.00001 is the one that his hair just goes gold and shoots up on end.
Second stage booster. He's got to, save it.
Once again, I forget what we were talking about.
I was talking about souls.
Yes, of course.
You know, it turned out to be hearts, but it's the same thing.
It's the lupus of Buffy.
Right.
It's always souls.
This would be a real problem for me as a podcaster. I don't know what I'd do without a voice.
Ooh, right.
No. I think my career would be over at that point.
Can we do Morse code? Everybody needs to learn Morse code, right?
As a matter of fact, we're going to do the rest of this podcast hush style, so check out our YouTube videos if you want to try to read our lips.
We're going to see how much we can slip past the censors.
Yep. This is a super ballsy thing to do, though. Like,
yes,
we're gonna take all the dialogue out of this episode,
mm-hmm.
and we're gonna air it.
Right.
I can't imagine Joss goes to, you know, his overlords and says, "I want to do this," and they're totally cool with it.
Right. Fun facts for this episode: Tyler says the gentlemen are actually played by mimes, which do a great job at building tension with their creepy smiles and carefree attitude.
Hmm.
And this is the only episode of the series ever nominated for an Emmy. So what did you think of the, just as Monsters of the Week, how did the gentleman grab you?
I thought they were effectively creepy.
Yeah, the way, especially the move. Scene where they were holding a person down and just with these like super polite, you know, like, oh no, after you, just ripping their hearts out with that, like you said, smile, makeup assisted smile plastered on their face. It was genuinely, I won't say terrifying, but I'm thinking if I'd seen this 5 years ago, it would have disturbed me to watch with the lights out.
It's disturbing in the same way that Clockwork Orange is disturbing.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Clockwork Orange meets Silent Hill to me. Mm. Like, very, very much a mix of those two.
And so my problem is I did not like the dudes in straight jackets.
Okay.
Like, the gentlemen were creepy and just kind of, like, menacing and, like, inexorable. Like, they just would keep coming. Like, yeah. They're not particularly fast. They're just floating after you. But these guys in the straitjackets doing their tumbling routines and flailing, or like, it took away from, like, the simplicity and elegance of the gentlemen themselves.
Okay.
Like, I felt like, well, how gentleman can you be if you're rolling around with this tool? You know, like,
all right.
Why, yeah. You're these implacable demons. What do you need heavies for? What do you need muscle for?
Hold them down, I guess.
But that's the thing. Like, the gentlemen themselves did the holding, didn't they? I thought
it was, maybe it was. Maybe
like,
it was.
It seems like all these guys was like mooks that you could fight, but
yeah,
I don't know. You ended up having to kind of, I don't know. That was the one thing I was kind of disappointed when I started seeing these guys tumble out and do their Cirque du Soleil routines. I was less impressed.
Yeah, I was unimpressed with the quote unquote authorities there in that town immediately jumping to flu vaccine as the cause.
Yeah, that's, I mean, all the meta stuff, right? It's like when they would cut to the news and it's like, this small town's been quarantined over a sudden onset of laryngitis. I'm like, right. What the actual fuck?
Laryngitis doesn't render you unable to scream or speak or... What else couldn't they
do? And why would they do like a full military cordon of the area, you know? It's like...
Right, it's not exactly life-threatening.
Yeah, well, yeah, it just everything about it was weird. Like, they didn't do that in the Once More feeling, like, town suddenly gripped in...
No, they didn't.
You know, self-combusting, dancing and singing. Like, that would be a similar kind of like, oh, it really breaks my immersion when you shove the real world into this fantastic situation. I don't give a shit what the... I don't need... This is a patently ridiculous situation involving demons.
Right, right.
I don't need an inset to letting you know that this is actual real-world phenomenon that people are taking note of. I'm not going to be like, how did this town get their voices stolen and no one from the outside world knew about it? Like, that's not even the 100th thing on my mind.
Right, right. Fair enough.
But I guess Josh knows his fans better. Maybe that's the kind of shit he's like, I'm not getting a fucking email from these fucks. The world knows
emails.
About it. Shut the fuck up. That was like, you know, preemptive putting his hand on a sword hilt kind of thing.
The faux military guys, though, much, much more reasonable. Much more ready to sit back and say, look, we don't know what caused this yet. Let's investigate before claiming a direct cause.
Yeah. I thought that the fight scenes were surprisingly good.
Yeah, they were.
Like,
they
I don't know whether Sarah
good,
Michelle
yeah.
Gellar like raised her flexibility and strength levels over the seasons.
Probably, yeah.
Because I remember them being really tepid and kind of disappointing in the first season, where she's like, she fucking roundhouse kicked some dude through a wooden plank that was pretty sweet, and it looked like she looked like she was throwing solid punches into things with weight, and they were realistically flying. Which is a lot of the time when my big problem when I'm watching like waify girls kick ass is like it's a physics problem.
Yeah, right.
Like you put Ronda Rousey in there.
Sure.
You put Gwendolyn Christie in there. Like, okay, that is a solid mass hitting. But however they did it, by season four, they kind of nailed it. I found all the kind of fisticuffs exciting in this episode.
Yeah. I thought. You know, like I said, this was my favorite episode by far. The fighting was part of that. I liked it. I was curious how the gentlemen figure out who they're going to steal the heart from.
Hmm.
Is it totally random? They seem to be just going down the hall, you know, choosing a door. Pick a door,
right.
Any door.
But on the other hand, they were going after Willow's future girlfriend, who is a witch.
Yeah, she is.
But not as powerful. So here, the other thing is, like, I was confused because I thought Willow's power was werewolf.
Werewolf?
Yeah, somehow I got it twisted up that she, her secret, because she didn't start off being a witch from the beginning, did she?
I don't think so, no.
And I know that she had found, has had some found discovered power, which this happens all the fucking time.
Sure.
Like, True Blood, you find out, Sookie Stackhouse, she's a fairy. She can blast light out her ass, and that's why vampires love her. This is, you find out Willow, I thought it was a werewolf. And no, I'm like, oh, that's why the really nerds like her, because culture. She's going to like fucking wolf out, and she's going to have furry ears and probably a tail, and that's why just love her so much. But she's a lesbian witch, which also explains why a lot of nerds love her.
I think they just like her because she has the flute action going on.
Oh, I thought you were going to say because she's an intelligent, well-written character. Totally. No, I left myself so open for the haymaker. Oh, man.
I went for the American Pie reference. yeah, so I don't know. Maybe it's just random. And these are the most unfortunate people on the planet.
Also, if the curse is broken by princess singing, why is Buffy screaming, which is not singing, nor to my knowledge is she a princess? Why did their heads all explode?
I thought he said it was a single scream.
Oh, I thought he said it was a curse. I thought he said it was. I was watching with the subtitles on. I thought he said it was a princess singing, but maybe.
Well, I could,
maybe it was a person subtitles. Scream.
It could have been.
Well, if that's
I thought
the
they
case,
said
then
scream.
I have no issue.
Okay,
but I thought. Well, and the other thing is, like, if in season two you found out that she's a princess by some long lost demonic bloodline,
right,
sure, that works
right.
too.
Who knows?
Yeah. And a scream could be, I guess, like, you know, death metal guys get away with it, so.
Sure. You can crack glasses with a scream, why not?
Yeah. And the other pleasure of going back and watching Buffy is all the proto-Whedon shots and techniques that he later honed in Firefly, and then you see all over the place in, like, the Avengers.
This does feel very proto-Joss. Like,
Like the final scene where he pulls out wide angle and it's just Buffy, like they got their voices back and they're just standing there, which is something Tyler, you know, that's one of the on the nose things that Tyler pointed out.
And in the body, I think there's a lot of really good camera work, a lot of really interesting shots.
Yeah.
But so I say proto Joss in both a good negative and a positive connotation.
Mm-hmm.
I do like seeing where he came from and his roots, but I also think it's not nearly as polished as he gets later on. And I don't know if that's a consequence of being a 90s TV show that he had to write this certain way because of that.
Yeah.
Or if that's just him finding his legs. But either way, like, you see a lot of Joss in it.
Well, the other thing is, I think there's still some things he struggles with, like emotional reaction. And I'm going
to,
let's go ahead.
Do you think it's
because
he tries to
body.
Zig where you think he's going
to
zag?
I don't know, because, like, I think The Avengers is a great superhero movie, but my number one complaint is the immediate aftermath of Agent Coulson's death. I don't buy the fact that thing brought the whole team down and bummed them out, like, whether it was an Asgardian god or a billionaire or a brilliant scientist or a fucking, you know, super American soldier boy. Or a Russian female a spy. Like, their reactions to all this, regardless of their knowledge of this dude, was the fucking same. And, you know, it's all gazing out in middle distance and angsty, angry frustration. And it's just, seems very like still a teenage way to deal with any kind of grief situation. And that's my biggest problem with the body. Like, I didn't think it was particularly well acted nor written.
Okay, well, let's move on to the body then.
Okay.
Let's talk about
it. Let's have Tyler tee it up. This episode is actually based on Joss Whedon's own experience of losing his mother to a brain aneurysm, and it breaks my heart every time. Buffy's mother, Joyce, was always a tertiary character and never someone I cared that much about, but I cannot watch a single frame of the post-credits sequence without crying. This episode does such a great job of putting you in these first few moments with Buffy and capturing how surreal and seemingly mundane they can be. I love the small details, like Buffy staring at the phone or calling out good luck to the EMTs as they leave. It makes everything feel so real. The acting is great.
So can I ask you when... So I think when he says post-credit sequence, he's talking about the post-theme song.
I think so.
Like the dinner that they're having.
I think so.
When the fuck does this take place?
It's a flashback.
It's got to be after the first episode we watched, after Hush, because Willow and What's-Her-Face are together.
Yeah, and also Giles and her mother have a thing.
Okay.
Didn't they?
I don't, maybe.
I thought that was something they hinted at in the previous episode.
Okay.
And now, like, that was a fact. But again, that's an assumption I made just trying to make some facts fit together.
All right.
And it was the previous Christmas.
Okay. It must be. It must have happened before, you know, after this first episode we watched.
Right. It'd be funny if the EMT said, you know, if you didn't have this lengthy 5-minute memory.
Out of body experience.
Your mother had exactly a 5-minute window of which she could have been revived.
I hope you weren't thinking of Turkey and your friends at that moment.
And her burning pies. How fucking petty, Buffy. Anyway, he says, the acting is great all around this episode. I love how everyone's different reactions are to the bad news. Willow needs to find the right outfit so as not to further upset Buffy. Xander needs someone to blame. Anya has limited experience as a mortal and is trying to understand her role.
Limited? Let's call it like it is. She has fucking no experience.
It's pretty bad.
I do not like this character. No. I think this is easily the worst part of all of these episodes.
Okay,
I agree. Anya, because she's there as a conduit for absurdity.
I got an analogy that I'm going to try to deploy to explain his attraction to this. And Tara's the outsider just trying to be supportive. Mm-hmm. Thematically, this is the climax of Buffy's struggle to deal with something completely normal that has nothing to do with the supernatural. As a Slayer, she can solve most of her problems by punching them in the face, but Joyce got a brain tumor and died from complications after it was removed, and Buffy was completely helpless to stop it.
Okay.
Okay, so I want to unpack this. There's this one episode, I think it's called The Offspring of Star Trek The Next Generation, where Data decides to create a child. To bring him a step closer to humanity. And he does, and he brings this, I think he calls the child Lal, which is some Hindu word for beloved, because that's how Star Trek rolls. Anyway, he does this, and, you know, he tries to teach her to be human, and he wasn't as good of an android engineer as his creator, Dr. Noonien Soon. And she suffers this, like, cascading neural network failure, and she essentially dies. Mm. And at this one point, this Starfleet official, this blue shirt guy, he's a scientist guy, comes out, you know, to tell the rest of the crew that Data's daughter died. And you got to remember that this is one of the guys who, in the previous season, was lobbying to dismantle Data, to figure out how to make more of him, to make, like, a whole, you know, essentially race of android slaves, which is the point of that fucking heavy-handed episode.
Right.
But Data, you know, because his thing was, well, you're a machine. Starfleet found you under interstellar salvage rights. You're our property.
Yeah.
And there was, like, the Supreme Starfleet court case about it. So that's another dimension that you would need to understand further. But he comes out, and he's, like, obviously moved. This guy's a terrible actor. But he's saying, like, at the end, you know, Data's hands were moving so fast and to try to, like, reroute his daughter's brain that, like, they were a blur. You couldn't even see him. Mm-hmm. See, I'm getting, like, emotional just telling the story.
Okay.
But if you just came in and watched this episode, you would say the same things. Like, why is Data? He's like this in, it's like implausibly unhuman. And, like, there's all this, like, you know, oh, I'm a wooden real boy routine, and it's a bunch of tired bullshit, but I eat it up because I love these characters. And this one in particular. If you don't have that, it's laughable.
And I agree with you.
And that's the thing. Like, I'm judging this as a person that has very little affinity for these characters, and all I can see is how terribly thin some of the acting is and some of the characterizations are.
Yeah, same here.
But Tyler obviously gets the full picture. So, like, who's right, who's wrong?
Nobody. It's different perspectives. Yeah. Yeah, so I'm not going to say this is a bad episode. I think, you know, the actors aren't amazing. They're television actors, and, you know, they're not
awesome.
That
used to be an insult. Nowadays, it's debatable.
The television actors from the late 90s, early 2000s.
So they were the B-squad.
Yeah, they're not great. Mm. But also, like, not, like, I have a bunch of questions that's rolling around in my head. Like, how did she die? What the hell? She just, like, is this really just a complete non sequitur, and she walks in and her mom's dead?
Well, that's the other thing.
Where's the twist? What demon has done this?
Yes.
When is she going to wake up?
And that's the, like, thing that I think also further kept me from connecting to the episode, because all the weird camera choices where Joss was trying to show how grieving Buffy was, and she wasn't fully processing, and she was zooming in on phones and seeing half the face. And
that was a really cool, like, shot. I like that.
When the doctor's telling him, he says the opposite of what he's actually saying. He says, essentially, I'll say anything so you don't feel guilty, when he's really saying, you did nothing wrong, or there's nothing you could have done to save her. Like, that's the message his lips make, but the actual thing that Buffy hears is, I'm just telling you whatever will make you feel better about it not being your fault.
Sure.
And so that's all very valuably, you know, that's all defensible artistically, right?
Yeah.
But it made me a guy who's coming into this know, like, I thought the same as you. There is some kind of demon that's fucking with Buffy, and this is going to be, like, at the end of the episode, everything's going to be okay.
I thought it was a switcheroo. I thought they were going to cut her open and be like, this isn't your mom. There's nothing inside. Like,
right. And then when the
where's
demon,
mom?
Like, at
the
end, when the demon sat up in the morgue, which is a classic horror trope, and I was anytime, like, even in Splinter Cell, if I'm playing Splinter Cell and Sam Fisher has to go through a morgue where there's bodies with sheets on them, I'd like, fuck it, some nerve gas is going to flood and I'm going to start having psychosis and these bodies are going to get me.
Yep.
Or if I'm playing Batman, I go through a morgue, this is where the scarecrow fucking scares me. If you're playing a horror game, well then just lube up because it's coming.
Yep.
So when he got up, I'm like, okay, here's the reveal. She's going to beat the demon and her mom will be back.
Yeah.
But it's weird because the whole time it kept me from emotionally engaging with the reality of the situation.
And I feel like if I had the context of maybe previous episodes, like I tried to go read the episode synopsis for the one before this.
Right.
But there was no real explanation. Like, she went on a date with some guy named Brian.
Well, they mentioned this Glory, which I thought was maybe the big
this
season
Glory
bad.
Character, no idea who that is.
Yeah, and that so it's like, I felt like I was following these breadcrumbs that are obviously false if you watched the episode, but to me, they weren't.
Yeah, I don't know. So I came in blind, and that was a big problem for me.
Right,
and like, I didn't enjoy it because of that.
Is Xander the kind of guy that punches his hand through a wall when he's dealing with grief?
Don't I don't know much about him.
Maybe Joss Whedon punched the hand through a drywall, and that to me that seems like a weird reaction to grief.
So tell me how a demon doesn't understand the concept of death.
I know, dude.
Can you explain to me anything about why? So was she assigned like to a different realm entirely?
Right. Like, you don't get the idea. Like, to me, the idea of your non-existence to a mortal would probably be even more terrifying than to a mortal. So, like, if anything, she would be overreacting to like this person being gone. And it's same thing,
but she
like,
was completely ignorant of the concept of death.
Right.
Like,
and I haven't seen a reaction this stupid since Orlando Bloom did Legolas' reaction to fucking Gandalf dying in Lord of the Rings. I remember listening to the commentary and Orlando Bloom's like, well, you know, even though he's young, he's still an immortal and he's been living for hundreds of years amongst the elves and maybe this is his first exposure to death and he just can't even process what... And I'm like, no, you fucker. No, that doesn't make any sense. You live shoulder to shoulder with other mortals. You've heard them.
Yeah.
You know? Like, one of the rulers of your realm is like a half fucking... And all of his progeny get to choose whether they're going to be human or elf. Like, don't give me this stupid
bullshit.
Are elves
immortal? I thought elves just lived a long time.
No, elves, and they're immortal. They can't be killed.
They're immortal? Wow.
If you kill them, they just respawn in the promised land.
Oh, pop out of another pod somewhere.
They do.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, like the green giant. They just get growing pea pods. That's right from the Cimmerillion.
Yeah, I don't know how to deal with this episode in the context of Buffy, because it doesn't feel anything like a Buffy
and
episode.
I feel like I don't want to keep talking about it, because it's just going to bum Tyler out. Okay. But I hope by telling
the
story...
I didn't understand the end. I don't know.
Nope. And
she's
the fact,
gone, where'd she
other
go?
Other than the fact that like Buffy has a sister, right, which I thought was abrupt, and that's another thing where I'm like, oh, well, okay, she's a demon child, and now it's all come time to pay the piper. But apparently that's just, she showed up in season 5, according to Tyler, and that was a deliberate mystery because the whole cast treated her like she's always been there, even though we know it's not. And I actually think that's kind of cool.
Weird.
To stage an obvious mystery like that.
I think he should have done something with that at the end of the show, and I don't know if he does.
Right.
But it could have been, you know, an overarching plot.
Right.
For the show.
Well, that's the thing. Like, when she started to lay her hand on her mother and it cut, I'm like, well, fuck this. I'm going to watch the next episode. And I got like a couple, you know, 10, 15 minutes into it, and they never really paid that off. So if that does pay off, it pays off later. So, but I was curious enough to try to do that. Okay, let's talk about Once More Feeling. I'm going to get to Tyler's commentary here.
Okay. I do want to say, like, about the body. I feel like it could have been emotionally impactful if you have a similar experience.
I guarantee it. I don't think Tyler's lying.
Or if you are a big fan of the show and you're more connected with these characters. So, like, I can see where it would be good for a lot of people. And that's, you know, some of the acting and some of the shot choices were pretty good. Some of the acting was real bad. But overall, I think I liked it more than Once More with Feeling, which didn't satisfy me in basically any way.
Okay. And like I said, I get choked up over the stupid Star Trek story, and that Data's daughter was played terribly bad actress, and Brent Spiner is essentially doing a Pinocchio pantomime, and it still gets me teared up. So, like, I get it, man. I get it. Let's talk about Once More Feeling, which I think is my favorite, so this will be interesting. As much as I love these first two episodes, this is my absolute favorite. Ah, Team Tyler, I'm on it. There are a lot of characters this season descending into darkness, and I love how that is portrayed and captured by a musical episode. All the music is so fun and happy, but when you actually listen to the lyrics and see what the characters are actually revealing about themselves, it gets pretty dark. The best example of this is the very end. The music swells as Buffy and Spike kiss in what is usually the happy ending of a musical. In reality, Buffy, being ripped from paradise, has left her completely numb and in desperation to feel something. She has started a relationship with the soulless demon. Backstory to this, apparently in the climax of season 5, Buffy sacrifices her life to save the world.
Yeah.
Willow casts some dark magic to resurrect her, thinking that they're saving her from fate and hell, and it turns out that she was actually in heaven, and she got ripped back into second life as a hell, which is something she's grappling with.
So, you're still in line for the heaven thing, right?
That's what I'm saying. Like, if you re-die, you go right back to heaven.
Why are you so worried about...
Well, maybe this dark magic was...
She like, oh, well, now I've been given another opportunity to fuck up and go to hell?
I don't know. God doesn't
That'd
truck
be
with,
scary.
God doesn't truck with black magic.
Yeah, right.
I mean, okay. I learned a lot as a Jehovah's Witness. That was number one. He just really hates that shit. Like, you can't even pretend you're Harry Potter or... Catch Pikachu, because it's too close to magic, man. An electric rat, you're halfway to hell. This episode is also somewhat of a sequel to Hush, thematically and expressing that it's when we stop talking that we start communicating. Most notably, Xander and Anya finally reveal their reservations about getting married, and Buffy finally reveals to her friends that she was in heaven when they brought her back, rather than a hell dimension.
What's going on with Willow and her girlfriend here? I'm utterly confused by this whole thing.
Parents,
there's some kind of fight.
They had a fight.
This
was all pretty well covered, I thought. By
she's now reluctant to use her magic. I don't understand any of it.
So she cast a spell on her girlfriend. They had a fight, and she's insecure enough about the relationship that she used black magic to cast a spell on her girlfriend to make her forget about the fight. And in this episode, and I'm not sure exactly how, but somehow looking at this herb. And this magical cookbook led her to the conclusions, probably because she's a witch herself, that this is what her girlfriend did. And what should she do about that knowledge? That she made me forget something, and, you know, that's some dark shit.
Wow. Okay, so... I wasn't picking up on any of that.
Yeah. So I've got most of that from the context of, like, the Previously On and all that, but I thought that...
Oh, I didn't watch any Previously On stuff.
Gotcha. That's one of the cool things about science fiction is you can take something about dishonesty in relationships and like a real life phenomenon, like gaslighting someone, like, you know, fucking with their sense of reality as a tactic of abuse. And you can take to the nth degree. Like, I literally have a spell that can make you forget
right.
a memory, and like, holy shit, that's some really dark, dark stuff. Like, what if I punch you in the face and, you know... Once you heal up, I make you forget that I hurt you.
Well, no, it just starts a wizard duel, and you battle back and forth, turning each other into frogs and chickens and
goats. Well, no, the wands connect, and then it just starts popping out all the terrible spells you've cast on each other.
And they land
just
on
all
your friends.
All the dirty stuff comes out.
Yep.
But no, that's why I like science fiction fantasy, because you can do awesome shit like that.
Sure.
Fun facts, Josh wrote... Oh, he did it! He fucking did. He put Josh. He slurred Joss.
Oh.
Joss wrote this episode, including all the music and lyrics, over a period of 6 months. He took a month-long hiatus early in season 6 and recorded all the music with his wife while they're on vacation in Cape Cod.
It's real bad. It's not good at all.
There's one or two things that are bad. The others are actually good.
I didn't like any of it.
Well, I'll fight you then. He grew up loving musicals and almost went into theater instead of film, but this was pretty much his first time writing music. There are mixed reactions from the cast when they were given a soundtrack instead of a script that they were expecting. Anthony Stewart Head, whose Giles had done some musical theater, and James Marsters Spike, that's the guy's name, had been in a couple bands, but no one else in the cast had any music experience.
Oh, you don't say.
And it does show.
You don't fucking say, Xander.
And everyone agreed not to use voice doubles, although Allison Hannigan, Willow, and Michelle Trachtenberg Don ended up singing very little because they were so nervous about it. So
who's the best singer? I have two people who are very clearly the best.
I thought Giles and who's Xander's girlfriend?
Giles is pretty good. He wasn't on my list, but yes, Anya, real good.
And you could tell professional level dancer. Like when her and Xander were dancing, it's like I was embarrassed for Xander because he's a fucking schlub, and she's just got.
Yeah, she's real good.
She's just she's got it down. It's like Dancing with the Stars. She's the pro and he's the star.
Yeah.
He's the B-level star. That's what it looked like, man. I felt bad.
The one other who I thought was really good was Spike. Spike actually was really, and I don't know if it was because the music was tailored to him and like his attitude
it's a pop ready, you know, crowd pleaser. The meta on is like ours is more of a retro pastiche. Chart topping pop song or whatever.
Yeah, no, I thought those two characters were easily the best, and Giles was real close third.
I thought Giles was pretty good too. Yeah, and I didn't think that Sarah Michelle Gellar was bad.
Nah, she was okay.
The last one. When the last thing where she's open up our hearts, and it had this really weird off tempo bridge, and it was so bad. And then
that song, she kept on doing Of bad. Heaven. I hated that song.
The
it was
way
terrible.
She kept singing Of Heaven was hurting my ears, and they made her repeat the refrain like four times at the end. I'm like, no.
I thought that whole number at the end was just a piece of shit.
Is pretty bad
from the writing to the music to the singing to the all of it. Dancing was even bad. It was God, it was a nightmare. But...
Oh, and when they had like Sarah Michelle Gellar freestyle dancing, the contrast between her ability, and that's the thing. Like, it's this isn't easy.
No, there's a reason. Like, and Neil Patrick Harris was so lauded for his work in Dr. Horrible.
Yeah, because he's
fucking
an actual
phenomenal.
Showman, sure.
Yeah.
Which is why I gotta make you watch Singing in the Rain, because it's the best example of this kind of thing that's ever been conceived. It's like insane execution on all levels, and super fun. But you hate this, so now I'm worried.
I hated this because it felt like Amateur Hour.
Okay,
it
so
didn't feel
I'm gonna
real
go.
Good.
Let's talk about as far as the songs themselves. Like the first one, Going Through the Motions. Then the I've Got a Theory. I'm trying to think of like all the different songs and like which one was our favorite. Which had the lines where Xander immediately accuses a witch of being the bad guy, and then realizes that like a lot of his friends are witches, and he starts self-consciously. Yeah. Backtracking in song, and then Anya's got some weird, I guess, legit phobia about bunny rabbits.
This didn't play to me because is it ever explained why she's actually afraid of bunnies as a former demon?
But it's kind
of
like Data doesn't use contractions, and they do a lot of jokes around that. But if you don't know that fact, if you just watch some random episode where they tried to land that joke, it wouldn't make sense.
Yeah, yeah, that's the major problem I have. I'm just not familiar enough with the show.
I like the one-offs, like the guy doing the big musical number about I got the mustard out, or they got the mustard out.
Oh, right.
There
were a lot of cool things
like
that.
And there was like when they're panning past the woman pleading to be let out of the parking ticket, and I realized that, and even the Red Demon himself, they cast those people because they can sing and dance.
Oh, right.
And
like
those vignettes are so much above everything else that happens in the episode.
Yeah, and they're cleverly used too. I think there are some moments where people are just talking and you'll see people dancing through the background.
Yeah.
Like the whole town's doing this, so you're going to see some weird shit.
Because it's magic.
Uh-huh.
And I actually thought because the Red Demon guy was so good that his duet with Michelle Trachtenberg, Dawn, was really good, because it was kind of one of those things where I felt like Michelle did a good, even though her singing was okay.
It was
and,
fine.
And they played into her like single octave range.
Yeah.
Which I don't know why he didn't do the same courtesy for poor Sarah Michelle Gellar, but she played a perfect, like, her character went between alternating, like, this is kind of awesome because I'm, like, doing these really complicated dances, and this is kind of, like...
How would you do it? So when the when
but
the plot...
then also, like, I'm horrified because there's a demon dancing with me. Like,
right.
Yeah.
No, so it was a little creepy from the aspect, like, I think she's a 15-year-old
well,
girl
they
in
do
this,
completely
is...
lean into that meta.
Right.
Yeah, she
right.
even says, like, well, I'm, one of the, her lyrics was, well, I'm 15, I'm pretty sure this is illegal.
Yeah, I'm super surprised by how much they lean into some of the little squickier elements of these interactions. Because they don't shy away from them, I guess, and
yeah,
gloss
right.
over them and try to ignore them. They point them out, and they continue down that road.
Sure.
So,
which I think
you know,
sometimes
that's
Joss. All you need to do. Like, I understand
right.
I'm being a little transgressive here, but...
But
this
is art. Let's
this
just
is
the, go
like,
with it.
Don't be afraid. I'm not going to rape this teenage girl. This is a demon. He's not going to hurt her. It's going to be fine. This is
By
a
By the
musical.
End, Buffy will save. Yeah.
Right. Like, that's why it's cool. Or that's why it's okay.
Right. So, how in this episode would you have spared Sarah Michelle Gellar the... indignities of singing for as long and as focused as
you,
she did
you
because
write lyrics that are you don't give her the Star Spangled Banner and honestly
okay.
the final song is like you know there's a Rubik's Cube that has four rows that's the like Star Spangled Banner is one of those things that it's got some notes that are notoriously hard for like an amateur to sing and they kind of
right.
they kind of throw you because it's got a non-conventional structure and like there's like really lows and really highs which is hard for like the average person to do mm-hmm. but it seems like and I just feel like that's what he did he wrote a harder version of the national anthem and gave it to a weak singer like if you got a singer who can't get more than a half octave of range then work with that
yeah
or auto-tuner
right
or...
I don't understand why they didn't use a lot of auto-tune especially on Xander like I think Xander was maybe the worst
oh I think Sarah Michelle Gellar
really
was, that of heaven was stuff okay. was I can't believe they actually put that
Spike
out.
Spike then
on air.
Goes on to do that, and it's okay.
It's that's what I'm saying.
I just think it's a bad song to begin with, and then
entirely agree.
And then you put a really excellent singer like Spike on it, and he can almost
yeah.
pull it off.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right.
Like Barbra Streisand could probably make that song sing
for sure. Yeah.
Bette Midler,
sure.
You know Whitney Houston, but right. Sarah Michelle Gellar, no, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But I did enjoy like Willow and whatever her girlfriend's name is, like obvious lesbian lovemaking. And especially yeah. when she's like, you make me come, please, as Willow's between her legs and she's lifting
that,
into the air. You didn't?
Yeah. I noticed the lifting into the air.
Oh.
I didn't notice the lyric.
Interesting.
Can you explain to me what the fuck is going on with Giles in this episode? He's having some crisis of faith where he doesn't think he's helping Buffy. Why?
I think it's more like, look at this wonderful, resourceful, beautiful, strong, intelligent person that I have taking all of their potential and kind of robbed into service. Like, he's just feeling bad about
it. To save the goddamned world,
yeah,
dude.
But still,
get
it's
over
like
yourself.
Ender's Game. Like, I think even if this 8-year-old boy saved the galaxy, you do kind of feel bad for what you twisted him into to make that happen. Like,
Harrison Ford doesn't give a fuck. Harrison Ford's all about that shit.
Yeah, and Gandhi gave even less of a fuck. Tattooed face Gandhi gave even less of a fuck. But I feel like that's like, yeah, I've turned this human being into a weapon. And her
yeah.
joy has been sucked out of life, and I don't...
Okay.
So I think it's that. But yeah, that was... Some of the imagery in that was kind of... And I thought it was a kind of undercut, because there's a lot of jokey stuff going on, but yet this was kind of deadly serious. And here's my point. If you're a fan of this show, these are storylines that have been brewing for
yeah.
a long time.
And
I know...
get it.
You and I, but that's not where I'm going. You and I, a lot of times, we get frustrated when angles when friction between characters just brews.
Yeah.
And, like, it's unresolved for episode after episode. And I wonder right. if Joss was able to skillfully set these things up to come to a head in the previous episode, or whether some of these things have been dangling, like, most of the season. And,
like
was
Spike.
This...
How long has this gone on with Spike?
Yeah, and like, did you feel as a fan, oh my god, this was worth the wait? Or were you a little bit tempered with, oh man, I wish we could have, like, I don't know if it's worth it dragging some of this stuff out so we can get this kind of payoff. I suspect it's the former because this is Tyler's favorite episode and he seems like a legit fan.
Right.
But, yeah. I did. The other thing I really enjoyed was Spike proclaiming his immunity to the curse and then slowly, like, being shocked and then kind of resigned. Oh, fuck, I guess I'm going to sing now, too.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that was a really good angle for him to play. I thought the rest in peace, his little rock ballad was good. The choreography was awesome in the graveyard, the way they tumble into the grave. Like, they really kind of nailed that sequence. I think that might be my favorite one.
Yeah, it could be. That was a pretty good one. I do also like Xander and Anya's thing in their house where they're talking about, you know, something that is eminently relatable to basically everyone.
Mm-hmm.
They understand the concept of marriage being a thing that you get nervous about.
Yeah.
It's not like that hasn't been done in every single movie ever. Right. So, like, I wasn't confused about that one.
Yeah. I thought that was funny. Context. And again, I was amazed at how well the Anya character was doing. So, yeah, I thought that was really good and funny and relatable and also kind of, like, crass. Like, there's a bit of a crudeness this episode that I appreciate. You know? Like, if you're going to go for lowbrow humor, just, like, really go for it. I also like Dawn. She's like, starts this number, does anyone even care? And she's immediately kidnapped.
Right.
Which I wonder if that was, like, some of, like, fan, like, I wonder how well, like, Dawn was.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a couple meta jabs at the character. Kind of like, you know, like was she perceived as a Wesley crusher? Like, this person is just shoehorned into this thing for some mystery we don't care about, and it's fucked up to relate. Because Buffy took a shot about her sister always causing trouble, and then when she's in the middle of anyone, does anyone even care? She gets wiped off the screen. I wonder. If so, I thought that's even funnier. I really liked the demon's main number where he did the, like, there's a lot of cool practical effects. Or maybe special effects. Obviously, his lips being ripped off is a special effect. But him changing clothes, like, I wonder if that was a lighting technique, or did they actually just do a break in the camera and the guy just really hit his mark. I don't know. What else do we... I was really hoping you'd dig this episode, man.
I don't... As an episode, like, I guess I just wasn't... I was not prepared for each of these to kind of be... self-contained stylistically, I guess, like, very, very different stylistically, and and not what I think of as a Buffy. I was expecting more of an action monster a week thing, and, like, that is not what I got at all.
I'm actually glad it
put me
wasn't.
Off on
oh,
like,
really?
Well, I guess I was hoping for one more of those after Hush was so good.
Mm.
And then I get to once more with Feeling after coming off the body, and I'm like, ugh, another one of these. And
I think this is probably the...
A poorly executed one at that.
I think this is one of the better... I think this is one of the better concepts of, like, taking three episodes from a television show that you don't need a lot of background to... If you don't enjoy it, at least appreciate what they're trying to do.
I think The Night Man Cometh is a better musical than Once More with Feeling. Execution-wise.
But it didn't have to do... Like, this thing had to carry water. Like, that just had to be ridiculous.
Right.
Which is... I think comedy is harder, but I kind of think that is the one exception. When you're doing musical pastiche parodies, like, just being funny with it's easier than being funny and also earnest. But I don't know. Like, I thought that... I also didn't understand at the end why Giles and everyone insisted she had to go alone and then immediately rescinded that. I know it was some kind of fault. It was some kind of working out of his standing in her way song, but I'm not sure why he thought...
Like, they've got to come together. They got to support each other.
But that's like that.
That's what the whole last song is, like, about, right?
Right, but I thought that point seemed false because at no point it's... No one was like, Spike was like, fuck this. All Buffy's friends were like, why? Giles is the only one, and he wasn't really explaining himself.
Yeah, I always get the feeling that they did lean on Buffy as, you know, the one with supernatural ass-kicking powers.
Yeah.
But now they kind of all have that in some way.
Except for Xander.
Xander's his Superman construction worker guy who can punch holes in walls. And,
yeah, when the plaster demon comes, he's going to wreck shop, let me tell you. Until the demon cast the 2x4 stud spell.
I guess I only really liked one of the three I don't know.
Well, that's a bummer.
I don't know. It is. I just don't have enough context to
appreciate. I'm 2 for 3, and I definitely see where Tyler's coming from on the body.
Yeah.
The other thing is, like, I didn't understand the ending of the Once More Feeling episode at all. The fact that...
the demon's just like, oh, it wasn't you who summoned me? Okay, see ya.
So it's Xander, but you're someone's... why didn't Xander get exploded?
Can he only take the person who summoned him?
Well, but he's saying Michelle Trachtenberg didn't, but apparently
Xander
Dawn...
did. Xander was like, I thought it'd be cool and fun
know,
and make everybody happy.
Like,
I don't want you as a child bride. Goodbye. I'm out.
Huh.
He didn't take anybody.
Huh. Yeah, but then he says, see you all in hell.
Right.
So what the hell does that mean?
Not Buffy. She's going to heaven.
Well, maybe again.
Not going to see her.
God hates magic, dude.
Right.
And then so after presumably the curse is over, they're still singing, which also I felt, I'm like, you know, if you're going to go to the trouble of doing this awesome and in-universe and it's plausible because of the type of show it is, why are you fucking with the rules at the end? Like, I thought that, some of the weakest medley stuff was at the end, too. And I'm like, man, I just wish they'd kind of quit while they're ahead.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, I admire him for being this experimental. I mean, like, right after, you know, famously right after Avengers, he took, like, 2 months off to shoot Much Ado About Nothing, I think, in his house. And he casted a bunch of his friends. And that was super fun. Have you seen that? I think that's on Netflix, too. It's in black and white. And it's a really good Shakespearean production of that play set in kind of a modern time. So, I'm glad he gets to do things like that. And he, like, same thing with Dr. Horrible. That was another kind of, like, creative recharge. Like, I just did a big studio project. I felt like I got dirty for doing, and now I'm going to just, you know, reset my creative calibrations. I applaud him for being able to do that and being successful at it, too.
Right.
Like, this is Tyler's, as a Buffy fan, favorite episode. Whole shit ton of people paid big real money for Dr. Horrible, and I don't know how successful the Shakes, but I know it was highly regarded amongst critics. So it's one thing to do some side jerk off project and nobody likes it, but to do that and like it being some of your best work is shit. That must make you feel like $1 million.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm guessing I need to go watch Firefly and Dr. Horrible again because I need a palate cleanser.
See, I just Dr. Horrible, maybe. I just recently rewatched all of, like, within the last few months, rewatched all of.
Yeah, me too.
Firefly for the Commission podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's our thoughts on these three episodes of Buffy. I gotta say that I had so much. So I had an opposite reaction from you. I had so much fun with these three episodes, The Body notwithstanding, that I kind of feel like I've put Buffy on my back burner now. Like, it's like, I don't.
Interesting.
And it might even be higher than, like, Sopranos.
There's a lot of it. You realize how much there is?
There's almost the same amount of Sopranos as there is Buffy. And I feel like I can really shotgun through Buffy in a way that I couldn't do Sopranos. And it'd be more fun.
I think it would be more fun, yeah.
I'm probably pissing people off, but I'm just, like, you know, being honest. I've got, you know, my backlog. You know, you gotta make priorities. And there's always. I feel like the backlog just never goes away.
No, it can't. It will never go away.
Maybe you think we'll look back in 10 years and we'll wish we had the days where we didn't we had too much good TV?
Because
I've seen...
I don't think so.
I felt like I've seen my dozenth serious think piece by a critic this week where it says, oh, we've got too much TV, it's terrible. And I'm like, really? Do you want to go back to the late 80s?
Do you want to go back to Full House?
Yeah.
Family Matters?
Right.
Like, those are fun if you're 8 years old.
Sure.
That shit's terrible now.
Yeah. Like,
I recently watched an old episode of Full House. It was garbage.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Garbage.
That was my Friday nights for years, man.
Yeah.
Full
TGIF.
House and Family Matters. It was good, clean, wholesome family fun, man.
Yep. Yep. All right. Well, we've strayed a little far from the topic. Thanks to Tyler Shumway for commissioning the podcast.
Yes.
Hope you were not too off put by my, I won't say disdain. That's a little strong.
Yeah, you liked the
by
first
my
episode.
Lack of excitement on the first or on the last two episodes. First episode, I really liked a lot, but
And you know, I make up for my enthusiasm for the musical because I thought that was just awesome. And can you imagine like this kind of thing on The Walking Dead?
I think
that's what that show needs.
No, you're right. You're 100% right.
Like if they came back from this Negan bullshit with a musical episode,
yeah.
all would be forgiven. And I kind of think they could do it.
They could.
Because they can make it like someone's, you know, fever dream while they're either turning into a zombie or recovering from head trauma.
And worst singer on The Walking Dead. Who do you think it is?
I think Andy Lincoln's probably pretty high.
I feel like
he's worn some tap shoes and done some soft shoe in his day.
All right. I think maybe the worst, Abraham.
Eugene?
Okay. Either one of those guys.
I don't see him dancing or singing in any kind of attractive way. But you're right. Abraham was going to be my
close second choice. Yeah.
What about... Do you think... Okay. Norman Reedus. Surprisingly good, surprisingly bad.
Surprisingly bad.
Because that's the thing. Like, I don't feel like there's a middle ground with him.
He wouldn't sing. He would just rev his motorcycle.
I'm trying to think if there's anybody else that might surprise you. Maybe Carl Jr.?
I don't know. I don't know what he would be.
Maybe Judith?
Judith, yeah.
She's the ringer. Child actress.
I think we wrung all the humor out of this.
Okay, yeah. Thanks again, Tyler. If you'd like to commission your very own podcast on Bald Move, you can go to baldmove.com/shop, click on the big film canister looking wheel thing. We got some community commissions up there where you can contribute shares towards the final completed project, or you can do what Tyler did and just go for the brass ring, go for the big ticket, and just point at blank, flat out, make us watch something.
Oh, and you know what they're making us watch next?
What's that? Babylon 5.
Babylon 5.
I was afraid of...
This is scary.
I was afraid, and let the record reflect, I tried to talk both Tyler and the Babylon 5 commissioner out of doing it.
Yep.
And I thought Tyler was justified in his bravery and his perseverance. Hope we can say the same about Babylon 5 guy.
I hope so. Because as I say, it's going to be rough.
You make your choice and you takes your chances. Because once we've gone through and watched it, it's too late usually to be like, it's too late to say you're sorry now, as Justin Bieber would say.
Okay.
That's it. Baldmove.com/shop if you want to spend entirely too much money on an entirely terrible product. Baldmove.com/shop has got you covered.